We use personality tests to figure out which career we're best suited for, which job applicant to hire, which person to ask on a date, or to have a laugh online finding out which Harry Potter character we are. But how well do personality tests work? What are they really measuring? How do we check them for accuracy? I'm Jim Meadows. Today on Focus, I'll talk with University of Illinois psychology professor Brent Roberts about the science, popularity, and limits of personality testing. And for some real-world experience, we'll hear from a human resources manager at a local employer about which personality test she depends on and why. That's on Focus on WYLL. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. If you go to our Facebook page at Focus580, you'll find a link to a Downton Abbey personality quiz. And answering just a few questions will tell you which Downton Abbey character you are. For the record, I am Anna Smith, the head housemaid at Downton. In the words of the quiz, basically the best employee ever. Also, my kindness and loyalty are to be admired, and that Bates Fellow should really recognize what a catch I am. My producer, Lindsay Moon, took the quiz. She is Lady Sybil Crawley, the most likely to end up at a political rally, try and help a servant do a better job, or scandalize her sisters by wearing pants to a party. So, now you know something new about both of us, but there are a lot of quizzes of that type. They're all just for fun. However, real personality testing is serious business, with a lot of care spent in creating the test, and often a lot riding on the result when you're tested. On today's edition of Focus, we welcome your questions about personality testing and your experiences with it as well. You can call in at 1-800-222-9455. That's toll-free, 1-800-222-WYLL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Now, later in the program, we'll talk about the science behind personality testing with University of Illinois psychology professor Brent Roberts. But right now, let's take a look at how personality testing is used in the real world, for instance, by an employer. The International Society of Arboriculture serves the tree care industry from its main offices in Champaign, where it has a staff of more than 40, according to their website. Cindy Harris is the Society's Human Resources Manager, and she's with us today in Focus to talk about how personality testing is used in the workplace. Cindy, welcome to Focus.
Why, thank you very much.
And I was just wondering, am I right in thinking that an employer is just looking for certain things in a personality test? There's certain questions that you need answers for.
With this particular personality test, we're just looking to see how this individual might fall into the total composition of the workforce.
Okay, so there's sort of specific information. You don't need to like learn everything about a person, except is really how they do at work.
That is correct. Looking at what maybe their natural abilities were, and to take a quote from Jim Collins, trying to put the right person on the right seat on the bus.
Is this a test that you do like during the job interview process? Is it done later in someone's employment as well?
I do. I do it during the interviewing process. It's an interactive segment of the interview that takes about 20 minutes.
Okay, it can play a role in whether or not a person gets hired.
It is one of many factors. I rely more heavily on the behavioral-based interviewing, which has the premises the more likely of your current behavior is going to be more of a reflection of your future behavior.
So essentially,
the True Colors profile kind of gives me a compass on where I might want to further probe for the competencies of the position.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the True Colors, that's the name of the particular type of test that you use?
That's correct.
Why did you choose, of all the ones that are available, why does your employer use the True Colors test?
Yep, actually, True Colors was selected prior to my arrival, which, as a human resource professional, finding an organization that understood the value of the individuals and coming together to get things done, I was pretty impressed. But True Colors, I've used quite a few of them, the Myers-Briggs, the DISC, and I love them in a classroom setting where we're all interacting and discussing, but haven't been very successful in being able to apply them. And there's something about the simplicity of the True Colors model that gives you the ability to actually apply it in the workplace. It gives us a common language to use when we're trying to improve communication or resolve conflict.
How long does it take to take the True Colors test?
Like I said, I do it within 20 minutes. It's interactive. There's a card sort, which tends to be kind of fun. And so for those intellects, don't let the fun fool you. It is research-based and is valid and reliable tool. But then there's 5 simple word clusters.
Okay.
And you have your color profile.
Okay. You say a card sort, so a person may look at a variety of cards of some type?
We start looking at the images and what they might indicate about a certain a color in the spectrum. And then there's language on the back, descriptors, and they get the opportunity, and then they kind of align them in order most like them to least like them.
Okay, so the person taking the test is sort of describing themselves through the test?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Does this testing tell you what responsibilities a person may be good with, or what sort of person they work best with?
It definitely is key indicators into, there's some folks that are very action-oriented risk takers. That's orange in the profile, and blues and oranges tend to be very creative in nature. You've also got your gold color, which tends to be the structure and organization of skills that, an organization would need, and then greens are the intellects. And so getting a group of people that can perform the duties responsible in our association through those groups.
Okay. Does everybody get to know the results of their test?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So is it okay if I ask you about how you did?
It's an assessment, and So I am a combination of orange and blue, and within our association, if you came in, you would see puzzle pieces outside of everybody's office and cubicle that is a visual display of their colors.
Oh, so everybody knows.
Oh, everybody knows. And once again, when you come up and approach someone, and I know that they're gold in nature, or that's their primary color, it gives me some clues.
So it sounds like you, does employees generally find this testing helpful? It helps them understand, not just themselves, but their other coworkers as well?
That's the value of the tool, although all of this is overrided by the whole concept that people are complex.
And that's that's the next part of it is how far you can take this testing.
People are complex. This is a very simple model. I use a couple analogies, one of them being the GPS versus the compass.
Okay, so this is more of a compass, you're saying?
This is the compass, and if you really want to hone in on somebody's preferences, you better ask them.
Okay. Do you retest employees after a few years, or is the first test the only test?
We have not implemented a retesting, although we do refresher training and then periodically the entire half-day workshop. And so during the half-day workshop, it does give employees the opportunity to retest. And typically there's a 1 to 2 point variation within the spectrum.
Okay, so maybe a little shift over time?
Slight shifting, but if they're really focusing on their innate tendencies, the things that you're more or less born with versus learned, you're going to see that it's what's in their nature. And I like to compare writing with your dominant hand versus your non-dominant hand.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty natural to write with your dominant hand, which would be more of your personality traits, However, I can switch hands and over time get pretty good.
Okay, so
and writing with my non-dominant, and the same thing with things within your nature.
Okay, so you can learn new patterns of doing things.
Absolutely, I fall very low on our spectrum in the gold, and one of the best compliments I get in my workplace is, "Boy, Cindy, you've really turned up your gold." I mean, it's a common language we use.
Okay, I think you said earlier that from your own experience, you think this test really works better, is more useful in the workplace than some of the other personality tests out there.
I've never seen it so easily adapted and right so that you can actually apply it. Like I said, I'm a big proponent of the Myers-Briggs. It's just you get 3 months out after taking the test, and there's really only a handful of people, from my experience, that can remember what their profile is.
Okay.
Let alone apply it.
But in this case, it's pretty clear to everybody.
There's something about the color spectrum, and then encouraging people to become more versatile in their spectrum with their interactions with others that you can definitely apply.
Okay. Well, so it sounds like you're saying that this is a useful test for arranging people in the workplace, as long as you know what the limits of the test are.
Exactly. You do not want to label people because people are complex.
Okay. Well, Cindy Harris, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about how personality testing works in your workplace. And again, Cindy Harris is the Human Resources Manager at the International Society of Arboriculture in Champaign. Cindy, thank you again for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about personality testing and how it works and why it's used and what the science is behind it. I want to turn now to my second guest here on the program, and he has to deal with all those questions. He is a professor of psychology at the University of Illinois. Dr. Brent Roberts was actually on this program several years ago with talking to David Inge about the science of personality, and glad to have you back on the program again.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Okay, you heard that description of personality testing, and I take it there for just in the workplace there are other tests out there. Do they work along similar lines, or are there different approaches to coming up with a useful personality test for work?
Well, there's as many approaches as there are scientists, I suspect, and industry individuals who use these. So this test is one that I think is well representative of the tests that are typically used in industry. It's a nice test. It takes most of the negative qualities that people possess and doesn't assess them, and assesses what you might think of as people's strengths, and emphasizes the strengths that you may have. And then that can be used in a very positive way for people in a developmental purpose, which it sounded like Cindy was doing in her workplace, which was nice to hear.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, especially if you're going to be sharing results and even posting some of them on your office door, probably talking about perceived and negative traits is not where you want to go.
No, I suspect not. I wonder to what extent the posting of something like a color or a label would achieve the same possible negative consequence. If you tend to not like somebody who's an orange, for example, that could lead to some problems, I suspect. So I'd be very curious to know how that would affect people over the long run, and I have no idea of any study that's ever been done to do that. But I've also heard it's very common in industry for people to use tests like the color test or the MBTI, and for people, for example, to come into a meeting and confess their personality type at the beginning in order to help communication or to identify who they are to other people.
Yeah, just give people a quick social starting point as to how to approach them.
Yeah, and you know, the issue there then becomes how much information you are actually communicating and how accurate it is and how much that should be relied on. And I think the danger in terms of typing in this way is that you can oversell the information that's being given.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, just going back, how long have psychologists been working with these sort of structured personality tests as compared to just sort of the one-on-one questioning that somebody might have in a session with a psychologist?
well back to the beginning of the 20th century. So psychologists started assessing things well before World War II. They were inspired, I think, in part by the projects out of World War I, where psychologists were employed to try to select soldiers and the like so that they could perform better in the field. And then from that time on, you had a long and energetic history of trying to figure out how to assess psychological qualities, whether they be psychopathology, something like vocational interests, or normal personality.
When did these tests start moving into places? Well, moving into places where, say, a psychologist may not be handy, like the workplace or something else?
That's been going on for a long time. So I'd go back to the 1960s even, and really since the MBTI was first created.
And the MBTI is?
The Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, which is the most widely used test in industry.
Okay. And I was telling telling Brent before the program went on that I in my workplace back in the 90s, I took the Myers-Briggs test. I don't remember how I scored.
Yeah,
conveniently. But it was certainly interesting and revealing in its own way at the time. How revealing do you think a Myers-Briggs test score is about a person?
Well, let me first just say I was sympathetic to Cindy's argument that something like a four-category system is hard to remember, and it's probably wise to use something simpler, though. That
Myers-Briggs is
a four-category, and so I hadn't thought about the necessity of actually remembering your qualities, and having something very simple is probably very good. In terms of the question of what something like the Myers-Briggs would get you, as I noted, it's going to get you some of your personality traits. It's going to provide some feedback in terms of where you stand. The scientific issue, at least from my perspective and from the field's perspective, is not the questions per se, nor even the content domains, but the tendency to then put people into categories, which we find to be highly problematic because people, as Cindy said, are complex. They don't actually fit nicely into categories. And so the MBTI oversells this idea that people are in types and that these types don't change. And that's a problem from an assessment perspective because most people are on a continuum and most people are in the middle of the continuum. And that's right where they put the dividing line for whether you're an extrovert or an introvert or an orange or a blue. And that's a problem from a scientific perspective and from an information perspective because you might make a decision based on being an extrovert, and you're just barely an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore,
are you more an extrovert in some situations than others?
Inevitably, you do vary.
But, you know, like among strangers as compared with people that you've worked closely with or things like that?
Yes and no, in the sense that, yes, people vary in that respect, but most of the personality inventories actually have that as part of the content domain. So mm-hmm. somebody would be considered high on extroversion if they were comfortable meeting with strangers and having a conversation with them. If you are uncomfortable doing that, then the tests are designed in such a way to put you more in the middle of the range or low.
Okay. Talking about personality testing, and if you have any questions for Brent Roberts, or if you have any experiences with personality testing yourself you'd like to share, give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Our email is will-talk@illinois.edu, and you can reach us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. And, you know, this goes back to a larger question. Personality tests measure personality, and then you have to figure out exactly what personality is or what personality is for the purposes of which you're testing for. You're giving me that sort of sage nod, which means, like, yes, it's a big field.
Well, it's a big field and it's a big thing in terms of what Cindy was talking about with a color test and tests like that. You're talking specifically about personality traits, which are one component of personality, at least the way we think about it. We also think more broadly in terms of individual differences. And when you think more broadly, you have to include things like somebody's abilities and somebody's interests, for example. And the fact that you're interested in going to a field like radio is separate from whether you're a conscientious individual or not. And they're mm-hmm. complementary and then useful. Both domains are useful to assess because they can give you a lot of information. And so the personality tests that you see used in industry are almost solely focused on personality traits and then a limited set of those to begin with.
And then, you know, even if you want to go into a field, I guess there can be a variety of different jobs in that field that might be subject to a to personality type as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can personality testing, whether it's this sort of testing or, say, the ones that, say, psychologists use with patients, can these give us full knowledge of everything about the personality, or is that just not possible?
Well, one thing that I try to remind everybody who uses personality tests, at least as the way they're structured, is that they're not really what we're interested in. If we're interested in somebody's personality, I like to argue that if I want to understand your personality, I'm going to put a camera on your shoulder or put a team of people together to follow you, which is frighteningly becoming much more.
Essentially make a reality TV show
right,
about you.
Yeah. Exactly. And follow you for 2 years. And not only follow you for 2 years, but hope to see you in critical situations. So if I want to know whether you're an anxious individual or a neurotic, I'm going to want to see you in situations where you feel uncertain or you feel stress. If you don't have those experiences over those 2 years, I wouldn't want to make any attribution to that type of dimension.
But maybe I'll decide I don't need to know that much, or I just don't have 2 years.
That's why we use self-report personality inventories, is because for the most part, we don't have 2 years. But you have to keep in mind that these are facsimiles or stand-ins for what we're really interested in. And that's both for scientists, and it's also for the individuals who use them in industry or just the lay public, if you want to know which Downton Abbey character you are. This is just one way to get at it, and it's an approximation. The surprising thing, of course, is how well that approximation works, but it's not the platonic ideal of what we're searching for.
Let me take a question. Line 4, we're saying hello to Charles from Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Thank you. About 40 years ago, when I took a personality psychology course or theory of personality course, we studied the various individual theories, Maslow, Erickson, et al., and I wonder, today, because I don't hear you talking about any of those various theories, and I just wonder, is that still considered important, or have those, theories been kind of replaced by other ways of looking at personality?
Brent, what happened to all those personality theorists?
They died, which unfortunately meant their ideas died with them at times. For the most part, the classic theories, the Freud, Jung, Adler, Maslow, and the like, are not widely used within the field of personality psychology. We gave up on the big grand theories, in part because theories like Freud's are sometimes untestable, and in part because many of the ideas were wrong. That doesn't stop some of these ideas, for instance, for being very influential. So Maslow's theory, for example, is still quite influential in industry, despite the fact that most psychologists, and especially personality psychologists, don't necessarily believe there's any evidence to support his hierarchy of needs or self-actualization mode.
I remember that from college, right, yes, right. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. But I'm wondering, are there any new theorists who have come along? Is there any theory?
Is there any theory? I would say that most people now are studying mid-theories in terms of the approaches they're taking.
By mid-theory, you mean?
Not grand. So if you want to understand why somebody develops or whether personality is consistent or changeable, you go to a developmental theory that describes the mechanisms and processes that are available. We have found the utility of things like Adler's theories or Jung's theories to be really not good at this point. And so the MBTI, for example, is based on Jung's theory, which makes the argument that people flip-flop between personality types over the life course. We don't see any evidence for that. And so we've divorced ourselves from those types of ideas because they haven't been useful in terms of understanding the phenomena that we're studying.
Is there still a hope of finding a grand theory of personality? Or are people just thinking, well, that's not really useful or even desirable?
There's always a hope. Some of my friends have argued that there are other alternatives that we need to consider. Bowlby's attachment theory is one that's often sold as another option. Evolutionary thinking is now actually gaining some traction.
Evolutionary thinking is?
So just thinking in terms of how the human species is created through evolution and how it would guide the creation of individual differences and why they would exist. So why would we have a domain such as conscientiousness in humans? What purpose would it serve? How would it facilitate something like survival and reproduction? That's how the evolutionary people are starting to think. And they're providing grander theories than most people during the last 20 to 30 years have been entertaining.
So stay tuned, sounds like the answer at this point. Charles, I wanted to thank you very much for calling in today.
All right, thanks.
And let's go ahead and take a short break right now. And we'll be back with more about the science of personality testing here on Focus on WILL. And we're back on Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and my guest today is Brent Roberts. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Illinois. We're talking about personality testing. Earlier we heard from Cindy Harris, who uses some real-world personality testing. At least she's working in the real world with employees. She's an HR manager at the International Society of Arboriculture here in Champaign, and she described how she used one personality test, the True Colors test, in her particular employment situation. Had a caller who was wondering, and this is something that Brent tells me you don't have a specific answer for, and that what personality test UPS uses for their drivers. But I was wondering if there's a larger sense of, do you know how a company like UPS would use personality testing? You know, are there particular jobs where you're looking for particular things?
Yeah, in some cases, industries have gone to great lengths to try to figure out a more efficient and valid way of selecting individuals. I was impressed the way Cindy was describing how she used the colors test as kind of an adjunct to the interview process, and how she had a very systematic interview to select people. One of our complaints or gripes on the other end of the spectrum is that many organizations don't use a good, valid way of assessing the qualities that they want in their employees. And personality testing is one possible way of doing that, and many industries do it, and to their benefit in some respects. So back in the late 90s, I was aware of companies like Target and other big retail operations using personality tests to decrease employee theft, which was actually a much bigger problem for them than, for instance, people coming in and stealing things. And they were capable of reducing the number of employees they hired that would end up taking stocks of clothing, for example. Mm-hmm. And that helped them on the bottom line. And that was done through what you think of as the typical approach in industrial psychology, where you go in and you do a job analysis, figure out what's required on the job, and then what kind of qualities or attributes would predict whether somebody would be a good employee. And in that type of approach, a personality test of any sort, but typically one that's comprehensive, that would measure what we think of as the Big Five, would get you information that would be valuable.
Let me catch up on that. The Big Five of personality.
So the one major finding within the field of personality traits over the last 30 years is that we have a working taxonomy of domains.
So this is like a working theory of personality of some sort.
The theory would be giving it too much credit.
Working model?
Working model would be fine. It's a somewhat blindly empirical finding. We factor analyze the adjectives in the dictionaries of most of the major languages across the globe and arrived at the fact that there are five major domains. And we're still having quibbles and arguments over whether it's five or six or seven. But we do feel pretty confident that they're five, and those are extroversion, agreeableness, conscientiousness, emotional stability, and openness to experience.
And then you might go on a sliding scale on each of those as
Correct.
To how much or how little.
Yeah. And for the most part, any personality test that you take will cover some of those domains, usually in part. And so you can't escape those domains in some respects. So any question you ask somebody, for instance, to figure out what character they are in Downton Abbey or Star Wars, will inevitably be somewhere in the domain of the Big Five. The color test, the MBTI, the DISC test, the Enneagram, all of these tests you find online, they all tap the same domains. They're possibly not organized the same way, but they actually give you the same information, just repackaged, so to speak.
I'm wondering, when we talked about all those different types of tests, I think a lot of them are used mostly like in job interviews, but what other categories will you find personality testing being used? And I was thinking, for instance, when someone's trying to figure out what career they're going to go into, what college, you know, what they're going to major in college, does personality testing get used there?
Well, it does, but we typically go to a different domain within personality. So we try to focus on what we call vocational interests instead of personality traits. And vocational interests are different than traits because they reflect kind of what you desire and what you want to spend your time doing. And that's a different thing than what you typically do. So personality traits tend to factor in the things that you do automatically and not you don't really think about. Interest inventories, on the other hand, have to do with what you would like to do. So are you interested in tinkering with mechanical objects or do you like to work with people? And that's a different thing.
Is that still a measure of personality or not?
I would argue that it's a measure of personality because I like to keep the field broad. So it should be inclusive of most of the major domains of individual differences that exist and are important for not only society but for the way people function. And what you want to do is an incredibly important thing and probably a much better thing for determining whether you should be in a certain major or whether you should be in a certain job or not. Your personality traits may then affect whether you're successful there. But if you're not interested in working with cars or not interested in being an engineer, it might not really matter whether you're conscientious or not or extroverted or not.
And are there a whole range of brands of tests for that sort of use as well, maybe?
Yeah, there are a range of them, and they've been in existence possibly as long, if not longer, than personality trait measures. And so if you talk to vocational psychologists or educational psychologists, Jim Rounds is an excellent one here on staff, they're experts typically in that domain. And for some reason, it got cleaved off from our field a long time ago, but it really does belong together.
Okay. Another type of testing that occurred to me is dating services, whether they're dating websites or other sorts of dating services where there's a personality test and maybe a test of what sort of person you're looking for. How do those tests work?
Those tests actually do focus almost exclusively on personality traits, which is somewhat unfortunate because there's not a lot of evidence, at least on the scientific literature, that we match up on personality traits with our spouses.
Do we match up?
Well, I think they call it? Propinquity and market forces.
Propinquity is a big word to me. What does that mean?
It means you just happen to be next to somebody who's attractive to you. And so you find people in your, you know, in your school, or you find people in your workplace, or you find people in your community, in your church, and they just happen to be there. And they also happen to possess the qualities that you want. And we do know that personality traits are important in the qualities that people want. Everybody wants somebody who's smart, funny, nice, and responsible. And that's almost universal.
That's the four. Smart, funny, nice, responsible.
Those are just the top ones. You can make a nice long list. They can be ordered quite reliably. But everybody wants a certain type of person in their mate. And there's very little evidence that whether you match up or not has really any incremental benefit to you. So if you both happen to be disagreeable, is it good to have two disagreeable together versus a nice person and not a nice person? We don't have a lot of evidence that that's a big thing.
Okay. These are the tests that are administered by non-psychologists, I guess, that are relatively quick. Are there any other fields where there's enough of a demand for personality testing that there's a whole range of marketers trying to bring personality testing to them?
Yeah, not in a sense of a business or an industrial sense. I don't see that happening often. So.
Okay. But and maybe in terms of in psychological counseling itself, is there personality testing there?
It used to be a very popular thing to do within the clinical domain. It's probably going to become more important as time goes on because the new Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Clinical Psychologists just came out. And
the DSM?
DSM-5 is out. And part of that, they have a dimensional system that's very similar to the Big Five, for example, and a test that's being used. And it might be that in the future these types of approaches will let's say, see a renaissance. The clinical field became reticent to do what we think of as forecasting for somebody's psychopathology. It used to be the case that you would go in, bring a person in, and give them tests like the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which is dedicated to assessing psychopathology exclusively, and then using that to tell whether somebody's going to be a successful patient or not, or to diagnose them. That fell out of favor for a long time, and I'm not sure whether it will make a comeback, but the issues themselves are very prevalent in the minds of the clinical psychologists.
Well, you know, that moves us right into a question phoned in from Sarah, who wants to know, what is a personality disorder, and are these personality tests used to diagnose them?
The tests that we started talking about, like the DISC test or the color test or the MBTI, are not intended to assess psychopathology. So a personality disorder is a subcategory of what the clinical world will think of as psychopathology, and it's assumed to be like a personality trait, but it's going to be something that's pathological. Narcissism, for example, is an example of a personality disorder, the narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder. And they have tests that actually tap these and try to measure
them. Would
a
test like a test for the workplace even see those sort of disorders?
Only indirectly. So we do know, for example, that the normal personality traits, if I can put quotations around that, are strongly related to what clinicians study. So neuroticism, which is the domain of feeling depressed and anxious and uncertain, is strongly related to all of the personality disorders that we see. Low conscientiousness and low agreeableness are some of the best predictors of what we think of as externalizing disorder, so antisocial personality disorder and psychopathy, for example. So there's a lot of overlap, more than I suspect people might be comfortable with. Would you be able to diagnose that with a color test? No. Are you going to get some of that information? Yeah, a little bit, but not, in my mind, worth diagnosing somebody.
So it would be a more involved personality test, maybe of the type that you said it just said had sort of fallen out of favor, that you might use to try to diagnose a personality disorder. Or are you saying that now psychologists are more likely just to go with, you know, a one-on-one conversation with their patient?
I think when it comes to treatment, the latter is the case, that more you bring people in, you assess where they're at, and then you design an intervention to help them out. So that you don't usually use personality testing of any sort in that situation for any utility. It's not that it wouldn't be useful. It could be. And there are many clinicians who do continue to use those tests, but that's not quite as popular as it used to be.
Is there a fear of misdiagnosis with a general test that's essentially the same test for every person?
I think you probably have to ask the clinician. I think there's a sense of utility when it comes to the interface with reimbursement systems, right? What does the insurance agent want to see on the form? And they tend to work with that as opposed to whether they're going to find anything useful out of a test.
And I'm wondering for conditions which psychiatrists would use medications to treat, at least in part, things like schizophrenia or a diagnosis of a bipolar disorder, is that something that a personality test, or you know, would be able to even a detailed psychological personality test would be able to see and look at?
No.
Okay.
In no uncertain terms, no. I, the tests that we create for sites like this or for the industry don't tap that well enough to be able to diagnose somebody or to be used constructively.
And the tests that psychologists used to use and don't use as much for their patients, would they be looking for that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. And those tests exist to this day, and they've improved on the MMPEI, for example, and they've created other tests to get at things like personality disorders. But those are used by clinicians, and they're in the clinical field, and they are just not as widely used as they were, for instance, in the 1950s and 60s.
Okay. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people's images of what a psychologist does may have been set by, say, models of the movies and TV from the 1950s and 60s. I don't know if they've changed that much over the years, especially if someone's watching something set back then. People watching, say, an episode of Mad Men, and to see a psychologist there, are seeing one that's still using those techniques, and that may be the model of what they think is going on now.
Possibly. I'm thinking of other TV shows that have psychologists that might be better. But I think if you really should have a clinical psychologist.
Sopranos.
Tony Soprano's
psychologist. Does that look like any psychologist you've seen?
Yeah, of course. Psychologists come in many, many different forms. So, and the clinical psychologists have many different approaches to their enterprise. All of them actually quite successful. So you can get people who are very concretely oriented, looking at behaviors and thoughts. I think Cindy talked about her selection system where she emphasized the behavioral-based interviewing, right? A clinical approach would be like that too, called cognitive behavioral therapy. You also still have psychoanalytic people, which is more like the things you see in Mad Men, right? Depth psychology, figuring out how you related to your mother or your father when you were young. So, and they still come in all those varieties, but there tends to be waxing and waning in those theories and how they are applied to the clinical setting.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, when we're going back to the personality tests and just some of those basic tests that we were talking about for the workplace or for a dating service or career counseling, how are the questions designed? Are they the sort of questions where a person is consciously describing something about themselves as they understand themselves, or are they trying to find a way in which people may be more revealing of themselves without really knowing it?
That's a really nice question. I would argue that most personality tests are not developed with that much forethought. Typically, we want to get at certain domains and dimensions, and then the person who's authoring the test will have a variety of approaches. Some of them are very simplistic, so I would categorize the question approaches into three domains. One is straightforward. So if you're interested in whether somebody's an extrovert, you ask them, are you an extrovert? Are you talkative? Are you gregarious? And those types of questions tend to be the most valid. Then there's the subtle approach, which used to be a tradition within personality assessment, and that was derived from tests like the MMPI, where you would ask somewhat interesting and inane questions like, I prefer showers to baths. And then you would look at the answers and see what people would say and then figure out whether it correlated with anything you were interested in and then use that. That's a fun way to do things because it tends to make the test mysterious for the individual who's taking it. It's like, what the heck are they asking? It's like, do I like shower? Sure. And then you answer that, and suddenly they reveal that you have some dimension or some quality. Those are the two dominant ways of doing things. The subtle questions like that tend not to be as useful. They don't predict as well. And then there's ingenious questions. And so I think in particular, some of my friends who work in the domain of attachment, for example, like to assess this dimension of avoidance, whether somebody likes to avoid relationships. And in that situation, it's not very good to ask an avoidant person, are you an avoidant person? Because they tend to get avoidant. So they don't want to answer the question, you know, straightforward. So they ask them questions that are indirect, where they say, you know, people shouldn't be trusted, right? And an avoidant person will say, yeah, of course, you shouldn't trust people because they're not trustworthy. But they're not saying something about themselves. They're saying something about people.
Yeah.
And by admitting to that, they're actually admitting in some respects indirectly to the quality that the psychologist is trying to assess.
To what degree do people try to cheat on personality tests and present themselves as someone that they think the tester wants to see?
I will argue a controversial stance on that. I'm almost always thunderstruck by how honest people are. People want to tell you who they are, even in what we think of as high-stakes testing situations, applying for a job, trying to get into any organization that uses some type of pre-screening test. It is utterly surprising to me how honest people are, because when you look at those tests, the scores are elevated. So there is some, you know, let's say, fudging of the dimensions that we see or the answers to the questions. But it is very uncommon to find people truly faking in a way, saying this is who I should be based on what this person wants. It's relatively hard. So if you're going to have to go through an interview and answer 150 questions and fake it, it takes a lot of cognitive effort to do so. So I think what people default to in those types of situations especially is what we call fudging. So you might put your best foot forward, so to speak. Instead of saying that you are completely and utterly disorganized, you say, well, moderately disorganized. And that, I think, is much more common.
We are talking about personality testing with Brent Roberts, professor of psychology at the University of Illinois. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's go to a caller on line 4, and that's David from Terre Haute. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I was wondering about the speaker's opinion of, please understand me, the Kiersey Bates, or the authors of what I understood to be a simplified Myers-Briggs test and its current validity. I've had some experience. We did a church workshop on it in terms of the differences of people. And it was just simply a revelation when I read the book. And I wonder what its current weight is in the profession.
And that's Please Understand Me, Character and Temperament Types by David Kiersey and Marilyn Bates. It actually has its own Wikipedia listing. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the book, Brent?
Oh, well, I haven't read the book, so I can't comment on the book. I'll use that as an indicator of what we think about it in the scientific field. Most practicing psychologists who are doing science don't use the MBTI or any variant of it, and nor do they endorse the approach that's typically done there. Now, let me qualify that a little bit. When it comes to the domains that are assessed by the MBTI and the color test, we would not dispute that those exist in people and that the test can get at those dimensions reasonably well. Where we start getting into trouble with the scientists is how those tests are used, especially the act of categorizing people into types. And that's where we really part ways, because we know that that's not the way humans work. Now, thinking in a utility perspective, like the way Cindy Harris was talking about at first, it's useful to know in what direction you are going. The real question from my perspective comes to how you're going to use that information. And again, if you suddenly get categorized as an extrovert and you're just a little bit over the midpoint in extroversion, and you make a consequential decision for your life based on that information, that to me is a problem. And that's the way the test should not be used. And then there's a tendency in industry to tell extraordinarily compelling stories about how the dimensions relate to a lot of different outcomes. And I don't see a lot of empirical evidence for the claims that are made there. A lot of them are pretty, easy. They're just a repackaging of what you said. I'm an extrovert, therefore you are going to like to be with people. That's what you told the person in some respects when you filled out the inventory. But a lot of times they tend to extrapolate pretty widely, assuming that, for example, understanding who you are is going to make you happier in the workplace or a better worker or more motivated. And I don't see any empirical evidence to support that.
Okay. Thanks. Yes.
Thank you very much.
David, thank you very much for calling. And we have another caller from Urbana. I think you may have good morning. You're on Focus. Do you have another question about Myers-Briggs?
I just had a quick comment. One thing I learned in the workup after we did the Myers-Briggs at the place where I was employed years ago was I had always thought that extroverts were better people than introverts, more interesting people. And what was very useful about the after session was that I talked about extroverts being people who recharged with other people, got their energy back, and people who are introverts preferred to recharge by themselves. And I thought that was a much more helpful way to think about those two personality aspects. And the fact that you can change and you can be mixtures, as some of your guests have pointed out. Thanks.
Thank you. And that is something it's less of a value judgment in that case on extroverts and introverts, more than just more of a description. And is that an accurate description of when you're talking about those basic types?
Is it an accurate description? Of course it can be an accurate description. The issue I think that comes up is whether or not it's evaluative for the person, but whether, for example, society values it, right? I think it's undeniably the case that the Western and especially the American society values extroverts over introverts. And there's probably very little basis for that, at least in terms of the empirical correlates, right? It does. If you find the empirical database related to extroversion, extroverts, for example, often suffer more car accidents because they're, I suspect, distracted. So there's negative consequences to being an extrovert. There are also positive consequences. For example, they tend to be a lot happier than other people. And that's been one of the most reliable findings that we get. As a scientist, I see that type of finding, and I'm sympathetic to the argument that you want to have equal value to these different dimensions. But it's very hard not to see society saying, well, I like extroverts more, and therefore value them. And, by the way, there's this finding that extroverts tend to be happier than introverts. And you may not like that. I may not like that. But it's an empirical fact, and I have to wrestle with it. And if you look across personality, it is inevitably the case that you'll find positive and negative attributes or qualities or outcomes associated with high and low ends of each one. But some of them have a lot more positive things associated with the high end. There are not a lot of really good things that happen to you if you're impulsive and irresponsible and disorganized. A lot of negative things happen to you. On the flip side, if you're very conscientious, you tend to live longer, have better physical health, have better positive social relationships, and do better at work. And I'm hard-pressed in those situations to then step back and say, well, we have to emphasize the positive qualities of both. That motivation, I think, comes out of how the MBTI is typically used, which is as a tool to validate and make employees feel better. And in that respect, the MBTI and the color test and the like are brilliant because they've taken out all the negative qualities that we typically assess in the scientific realm of personality.
And that raises the question, is that useful in the workplace as a use for the test, or is that deceptive and perhaps counterproductive, or is it a little of both depending?
Well, it depends on how it's used. So if the real goal of industry is to make employees feel good by giving them the MBTI and the like, then it works perfectly.
How about making them more productive by putting them in the jobs they're suited for?
That's a completely different question. And in that situation, you may not find enough information in something like the MBTI that's useful to you. And thinking in terms of a developmental angle, you know, what do you want to do to maximize your human capital and your employee and your workforce? Sometimes in those situations, you may want to know what the negative qualities are so that you could actually help people to work on them or to create a workplace that doesn't punish them for, let's say, a negative quality that's not a problem.
We're just about out of time. One question that occurs to me is, Brent, have you ever taken a personality test?
I have, actually.
Have you maybe tried the different brands of them?
Yeah, you know, I looked over some of the ones that we've been talking about today, and they're a lot of fun to take.
Did you come out the same way in all of them?
Let's see. No, because they try to create systems that are incomparable in some respects. So in some cases, of course, I'm a green on the color test, but I think that's not you know, too surprising. But on some of the other tests, you have a different set of dimensions, and it's hard to translate.
Was there useful information that came out of those tests, do you think?
I think some of my friends and family might argue that I could use that information to my benefit and to theirs, I suspect. Did I find anything surprising? No, I did not.
Okay. Well, we've been talking about personality testing and about personality with Professor Brent Roberts. He's in the Social Personality Organizational Division of the Department of Psychology at the University of Illinois. And thanks for joining us on Focus.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thanks also to Cindy Harris, Human Resources Manager at the International Society of Arboriculture in Champaign, for her explanation of how personality testing is used in the workplace. We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program at our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director, and Sari Lesk, our intern, helping with production and research. This is Focus on WILL.